I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. I've been reading the debut short story collection of Deepa Rajagopalan, Peacocks of Instagram, and though it has moments which are tough to read, it's incredibly engaging and often funny. Deepa joins me now to talk about the short story collection that features characters who are diasporic Indians, who contend with ideas of what it's like to be safe, how to survive, and what to consider home. We have different characters who exemplify strength and ingenuity in the face of racism, overt or casual, and ones who have to weigh decisions for themselves, considering family. I'll ask Ms. Rajagopalan about the characters in this book, as well as what it was like to write them amid the situations they find themselves in. Deepa Rajagopalan won the 2021 RBC Pen Canada New Voices Award. Her work has appeared in literary magazines and anthologies, such as Bristol Short Story Prize Anthology, The New Quarterly, Room, The Malahat Review, Event, and Arc Poetry Magazine. She has an MFA in Creative Writing from the University of Guelph. Born to Indian parents in Saudi Arabia, she has lived in many cities across India, the United States, and Canada. The website for more is at deeparajagopalan.com. This new book is published by House of Anansi Press. We spoke this past Friday. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Deepa Rajagopalan. Ms. Rajagopalan, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for
joining. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Yeah, good, good. I'm so excited to be here.
It's such a beautiful collection. As I told you, I'm only about halfway through it, and I've already been quite moved by it because the characters in your stories are just fascinating because they're obviously not perfect people, but they find themselves in circumstances where the past, the present, and the future all come together in these specific moments. What is it like living with these characters? I was just telling you before we started that I like a lot of them because they're also wise. When you live with them, as you do, because you're the writer, you're the creator, do you find that your relationship with them changes as, the longer you live with them, say?
Yeah, I think so. I think they follow me everywhere. Like when I'm in the process of writing the book, editing the book, I feel like when I'm just going about my day, it feels like these people are people from my life, and I just know them so intimately. The relationship with them changes in the sense sometimes I find, you know, myself changing after I write a character and just allow myself to get into that space and be a little bit, I wouldn't say unhinged, but also kind of not so worried about perception.
Yeah.
You know, I'm able to kind of put that down. I feel like that changes me a little bit. And once I was done with the entire book, and you know, I made that intentional connection between the characters, like they show up in each other's stories.
Yeah.
And then when I kind of introduce a character in another story from, and then kind of view them from the other character's point of view, I think that also changed the way I look at them.
Yeah, I have to say that, as I said, I'm only halfway through, but a number of the characters have already recurred in big or small ways in other stories. Was that fun, connecting the stories as you do?
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoy, you know, finding those connections, those Easter eggs in books, especially in short story collections, because that's, you know, not expected.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that process, and I spent a lot of time trying to make sure that it doesn't turn into like, okay, now it's a novel, but at the same time, you know, just the links be subtle enough, but also enough so that the reader recognizes them.
Yeah, like Rania shows up in a subsequent story, and I remember reading it. I go, oh, I know her.
Right. Yeah. And that one, you know, especially just the hotel and a little mention of her, but you kind of, the reader has to do the work of making that connection, and that I think is more enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's why I can't wait to get back to the book. after I speak with you today. I guess I'd like to begin with Rania, because I've already mentioned her. She's the central character in the story, Cake. She's a housekeeper in a hotel, and she wants to do more, doesn't she? She wants a promotion, but that's not possible, not because of her, but there are a lot of people around her that are just unwilling to help her. And I couldn't help but think, because my parents are Filipino, and Rania is obviously a character, what we would call ethnic or a minority, say, in this country. She just strikes me as a character who, that if she were white, she wouldn't have as many challenges as she does, because she's not, right?
Right, yeah, for sure. I mean, she has, multiple challenges, like so many levels of it, right? There's race, there's religion, there's also class, right?
Gender as well, yeah.
Gender as well, yeah. There's so many things working against her. So I really wanted to kind of build a character who understands this, right? Who just like, yeah, this is, all of these things are working against me, but still has that dream, still has those desires and has a lot of rage inside her, but it's quiet, right? Like I really wanted her to be, quietly trying to get what she wants.
Yeah.
Because otherwise she knows that she's not going to, it's just going to be more disadvantages for her.
Yeah, talking about you mentioned rage. I mean, I got that as I was reading the story. You really do feel that. Mm-hmm. As well as, the discrimination, it's just so casual that's what makes the reader full of rage as they're reading this story.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I actually wanted, even what happens with her boss, and just her being sidelined that way, I wanted that, and the way she responds,
yeah.
I really wanted that to be, kind of not very in your face, but you need to kind of think about the impact of what she's done and what happened to her and how she's taken that experience and used that to get what she wants.
Yeah, and it's also a story that's has a lot, and all the stories that I've read so far, they're often brutal, they're often horrifying moments in them, but there's a lot of humor too. And is that fun for you to do both, say, in a story, or find the humor in sometimes dark situations?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that because, I really worked hard to put the humor in, and to kind of not change the humor to fit, a Western gaze. So the humor in the story is very, very Indian, really. Like a lot of people I know in real life who have, in fact, the more trauma they've gone through, the more funny they are, the funnier they are. Because that's a way of kind of dealing through through traumatic situations, and just laughing at yourself to even get through those situations. So it was like when I was through the editorial process, and I've been many people have seen this work, and I've noticed that some people can recognize the humor, and some people don't see it. They see tragedy. So I really had to, work really hard to make sure that I keep the humor in there, because that has been my experience with South Asian people.
Yeah, like the dad in Live-In.
Yeah.
He comes across as a likable guy, and you also mm-hmm. see how he's an imperfect parent. But
right.
throughout it all, the humor is there, that he's a guy that you really do come to like a great deal. And
right.
You laugh at even just little things that he does, even emojis that he uses on his phone.
Yeah.
You can laugh at that because, that's an older person. But that's somebody who is trying to adapt to places and situations that he obviously would never have thought he'd find himself mm-hmm. in, a widow and in a different country, right?
Yeah, exactly. He is, his wife died, and he's living alone, and, his kids are not with him anymore. So it is a sad, kind of a life, but he doesn't make it sad, right? Like, he tries to connect with who he can connect with and finds new ways of connecting with people. And I think that's the kind of people I've seen. So I really wanted to bring that, into the page.
And then the narrator in Live-In is his son. And,
right.
I found it incredibly poignant in that story when he realizes how different his father is to another member of the family, as opposed to how he is to a father. And there's a beautiful line in the book, and I wrote it in my notes, but I don't have my notes with me, about just how hurt the narrator in Live-In is when he realizes that.
I just thought that was a beautiful
moment.
Yeah, because, sometimes you just can't build certain relationships with the people you're really close to. There's some kind of barrier, like it could have something to do with the way you were raised. And just your background, right? Like a lot of people in India, for example, like dad don't necessarily hug their sons, right? That's an example, but he just wasn't able to build that relationship with his own son and vice versa, but he just found it easier with, somebody else, who's not his son.
Yeah, and even the idea, because the title of the story is Live-In, that has to do with a couple who are living together, unmarried, and his view on that has obviously changed, hasn't it, for the narrator, right?
Right, yeah. I think that's interesting because even in, my generation, I've seen how parents have changed.
Yeah.
In the last 10, 15 years where, their views have changed because, the society is changing and they just have to kind of adapt.
Yeah. The title story of the collection is Peacocks of Instagram. I found that quite moving. By the way, I listened to the interview you did with the last chapter the other day because I want, and this is selfish, not to steal their questions, but to find out how to pronounce your last name. And I think I heard in that interview that you'd studied engineering. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Is writing a short story like, it is craft, isn't it? There's a lot of building involved in writing, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of craft, and I think there's a lot of creativity, right? There's the imagination portion of it and creativity,
sure.
But putting it together, I think there's definitely craft there.
And the reason I brought that up is because in Peacocks of Instagram, the central character, we get a sense of who she is, where she works, and what she does for a living here in Canada. And then the way that it builds, that we find out what happened to her in her past and what she's left behind in India. I found that so incredibly moving because the you're building up to this huge payoff. And these marvelous details that you just drop in the middle of, there's a sentence, and I'm not going to use a sentence because it'll give away part of it. But where we find out for the first time what happened to her parents. And it's just so marvelously built as a story that, and then I think of the breakthrough that she has with the protester. And then her telling him about what happened. And then the beautiful line at the end. I'm still thinking about it several hours after I finished reading it. I can't help but think there's obviously art in the way you chose words and the story and the characters that you built, but the craft itself of telling the story, there's work there that I'm seeing, that the foundation, if you will, you've laid it out so well.
Right. Oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think I worked a lot on that story too. I didn't want it to be kind of like, oh, we're withholding information, but at the same time, I wanted the payoff to be in such a way so the a reader remembers that next time they see a coffee, you know, shop server, they don't diminish them.
Yeah.
They don't think this person is just a coffee shop server, right? They have stories inside them. They have so much talent, you know. So I think I really wanted to kind of make that impact big enough so that the reader leaves with that feeling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one of those stories where there's a lot in there that's rough and that's tough to read. But it's such a satisfying payoff. You know, I can't wait to go back and read it again. It's just I can't say enough about it. Another story that I just found fascinating was Whatever happened for the good. It's such a good title for a story, and you don't understand what it means until you finish reading the story.
Right.
But that's a story where the narrator is an 8-year-old girl. Is that how old she is? I'm trying to remember. Was she 5 or 8?
She's 8.
She's 8. Yeah. And you know, it reminded me of when I was a kid, and how adults were. You know, they wouldn't tell you everything, but you seemed to figure it out. And I guess us 8-year-olds were pretty clever, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. I really wanted that story to be from the child's perspective, even though you know, what's happening is happening to her mom. But yeah, I wanted to be able to see all the kind of traumatic things happening in their lives.
Uh-huh.
And the progression of that, but through a child's lens, and apply that lens. What do they focus on, right? Like, recently, I forget the name of the movie, but somebody was telling me about a movie about a child. It's told from the child's perspective, and the entire movie is shot at the height of the child. Right? So so essentially, you're not seeing adults' faces necessarily. You're seeing their torso or their legs and, you know, things like that. And I thought about that when I was writing this, to say I really want everything to be there, like all the big stuff to be in there, but it to be told from the perspective of an 8-year-old. What would they notice? What would matter to them?
Yeah, I love. There's one part of the book where they arrive in India from Canada, and she's meeting. I don't know if she's met some of these people before, but she knows them as, you know, her mother's sister or her mother's grandmother, or her mother's mother, I should say. And she does the thing that all kids do, compare them to one another. That she looks like her, but she's not really like her. And that's not just physically, but temperamentally or you know, just habits even, right?
Yeah, I think... you know, we underestimate what kids notice, right? Like, I have a 10-year-old, and, you know, I think she was probably 8 when I was writing this. And, you know, I started thinking about, you know, the things that adults say and what might they be picking up and understanding. So I really, you know, I wanted to make sure that the child's perspective comes through.
And that's another story where it There are things in there that are quite tough to read, quite brutal, and yet there's a lot of humor too in it, isn't there?
Yeah. I you know, a lot of people I know, you know, growing up are really funny people, right? And they say things like this, and I really wanted to make sure that in the story, whether every reader gets it or not.
Yeah. The another theme that I noticed as I'm reading the book is that it doesn't matter whether it's a workplace or a family. There are these moments where somebody becomes skeptical of somebody in charge, whether it's their boss in the corporate computer story, or just even in a family, you know, somebody that's older than them that they have to listen to. That really is coming of age, isn't it? You know, the people talk about puberty or you know, first love, but that moment when you realize that the person that's in charge really doesn't know what they're doing, or that's a great moment of just revelation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just a good question. I nobody asked me that. Yeah, you're right. It is a moment of revelation, and it's also like the rug is being pulled under you because you kind of picked up this person, and now this, if this is not right, then what's right, right? Like, so it's that moment before you, you know, become yourself, and before you find what you believe in, that it's kind of a terrifying moment. But yeah, I think that's something that subconsciously I think about.
And it's also empowering, too. I mean, in Rania's case, she decides to do something that, that, as we learn, changes her life and changes her work, her position of work. In A Thing with Many Legs, the person is empowered to do something, but at that point, they've lost the job that they had, right?
Yes, yeah. They've lost the job that they've had, but, you know, in that story, too, there's... so much kind of rage and resentment within that person, but they're only able to exercise it in a certain way, and they just decide to do it in that way and kind of bear the consequences of that.
Yeah, that's fascinating you mentioned that, because I just remembered they aren't really working in a workplace, are they? They're all working remotely. And they can only really express themselves either on the phone in very short conversations or in very lengthy emails. and I guess that's a reality for a lot of people nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, in fact, that's really the only, story set during the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And that was important to be set during the pandemic because, people were trying to, especially this, the narrator of this story is they're just in their early 20s, is their first job, and they're just trying to figure out who they are, and to be locked up like this, what do they do with, how do they find intimacy, right? Like, that is something that, I was really pondering during that time, and what do they do for intimacy, and, it's so ambiguous. Like, I wanted to make the relationship between that narrator and Raji quite ambiguous, intentionally, because of the times that they were living in at the time.
There's a funny scene, and I related to this, where the central character in that story is at the kitchen table or the dining room table and talking to, I believe, their father, who mentions somebody that they should know, but they've forgotten.
Yeah.
And they pretend that they know who the parent is talking about, and it goes on for a while, doesn't it? And I can't help but think that happens to a lot of us, doesn't it?
Yeah. Hasn't it happened so many times to us? Like, I just feel like I just go along with it because I don't want to get into another tangent.
I was laughing out loud reading that because I just, that happens, at least once a week with me. And it's not just at home, that's at work or, with friends even.
Right.
You just have to get, to the end of the conversation sometimes.
Yeah.
We see in your characters, this is why I find them so likable, is that the strength of character in having to adapt to new surroundings and trying to, because they don't really... some of these characters we're left with them in the middle of all of this, right? We don't know what happens later, and that's the thing that I think makes a number of the characters in the book heroic in a way. I don't know. Did you see them like that?
Yeah, I sometimes describe some of the characters in the book as like I wanted to center ordinary people and talk about their extraordinariness, but I really don't think people are ordinary. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I think that everybody, we meet, they have inside them, and sometimes they recognize them only if they're placed in, situations that are difficult. I do think some of these characters are heroic. even in Cake for sure, because of the situation the main character goes through. I don't know if you got to the story Rahel, but in that too, they just are, you know, they're just flawed people, but they find a way, you know, and I think that's what, you know, most of us are trying to do.
Yeah, this instinct to survive, especially. I mean, you mentioned Cake. There's a moment, and I really don't want to give this away for people listening to us, where she's placed in a situation where she could leave, but she does stay, and she could be a victim, and she is in a way, but she has enough agency that she's able to use that to her advantage later on, and not even not even specifically where the people know that she's doing that. Which is a marvelous way to look at survival, and I think that's how a lot of us survive.
Right. Yeah. And especially in her case, like that, she knows that, you know, if she leaves, nobody is gonna care. Nobody is gonna miss her, or I mean, they'll probably miss her because of the work amount of work she did. But you know, it's just her, and you know her. You know, the challenges ahead of her at a new place would be similar. You know, it's not going to be an easier situation for her. So she decides to stay and decides to, you know, find a way through that situation. And I think there's a bit of resourcefulness too, right? Like she kind of very quickly comes up with the course of action. And I think that's really... you know, self-preservation and that instinct to survive, for sure.
And it's not just even surviving. I mean, like I was thinking about just how resourceful Rania was, and then a lot of these characters are. They have to be that because they also have dreams. And I think that's what I think a lot of us overlook when we see a lot of these people in our daily life, that these are people who are not just trying to subsist even. I mean, that's hard enough in this country. But I mean... you're doing so because there is a goal, there is a dream at the end of the day, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really wanted to kind of subvert what that dream could look like, you know, for people of color, for South Asians. There's a perception that this is the dream, you know, based on their background. This should be the dream, but I really wanted to kind of shake that up in many of the stories to say, no, I mean... irrespective of where they came from, their dreams can be big or small or just weird. Like, they're allowed to desire what they want to desire.
Yeah, my parents are Filipino, and so a lot of the stuff I had growing up was that getting here was dream enough. And for subsequent generations, it isn't enough, is it? Nor should it be.
Exactly.
The other thing that I'm getting as I'm reading the book, and I can't wait to finish it because I think I'll understand a little bit more, is that a lot of these characters are healing, aren't they, in a way? And not in the, again, this is the gift of the book, is not in the ways that we would usually think people heal. They find their own way of healing, right?
Right, yeah, I think so. And I think... I was also thinking about healing and finding beauty, right? Like finding beauty in the world in different ways. Like in Peacocks of Instagram, there's, you know, she's making these beautiful things, and that is her way to heal. Like she blocks out a portion of her life for years together, and then, you know, she finds this avenue elsewhere, and that's her healing. And in, you know, once you get to the story Bestsellers, which is the last story in the collection, also there she finds healing through things that she makes, but they're not traditionally considered beautiful. Right? So, yeah, I was definitely thinking about healing, but yeah, healing in ways that that make sense for each character, because that's quite different. And I think that's what short stories give us, right? Like it gives you. Such a range of voices and characters you can put in. I like to say, or I like to think that short stories give you the freedom to write about characters who are kind of in the fringes of society, and so you can show, you know, all their weirdness without being worried about, can I sustain this throughout the book?
And when you look at the fringes, you can see it from their perspective, which I think we don't often do. We don't especially do that in our daily life, do we? And in a way see the wider world, right. Too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait to get back to finishing this collection, because if the first half is anything like it, I mean, I know I'll enjoy it a great deal. Are you still writing short stories? In that interview you did with the CBC, you were talking about working on a novel, but the medium of short stories, is that something that you'll continue to do?
Yes, absolutely. I'm always, writing some short stories and trying to send it out to places, trying to place them in some magazines. I'm also trying to finish the novel, so I have to kind of reserve time for writing the novel. This year I did manage to write one short story, and last year I wrote a couple of shorts that's not featured in this book. I love the form. I think the short story form is so magnificent because you can, you have to say so much. Mm. I forget the quote, but there was this quote by Hemingway where he said something like, a short story is good when you know more about the character than you write, or something like that. I forget the exact quote. I think about that, right? So you know everything about this character's life, but, you have to leave a lot for the reader to imagine. So they're part of this process of, putting this character together.
Yeah, and it gives us space to, because, I mean, I've just read this in the last 36, 48 hours, what I've read of it. It's giving me space to think about the people that I see in my daily life or people that I've known in situations similar or dissimilar altogether. And it's a marvelous space to be in, because you're not only just thinking about these stories, but you're also thinking about the people around you, which is a good thing to do from time to time, to think about other people other than yourself,
Yeah.
Adipa, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. I can't wait to get back to the books. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you for having me.
The website for more is adiparajagopalan.com. The book is called Peacocks of Instagram. It's published by House of Anansi Press. Its author, Adipa Rajagopalan, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.